What's up, boys?
Hello.
Mike, where do you live?
Live in Whitby.
Oh, sick. We're close. I'm in Toronto
Oh, cool. Very good. It's a nice day today here, isn't it?
now. It's my first day, maybe second day actually in Toronto. I didn't realize it gets dark at 5 o'clock now. It's like, God,
Fast.
get me out of this place.
Right? What do you do, I guess, right? Just gotta enjoy it.
Yeah, man, I was in Vancouver until a couple of days ago, and it was probably till 7:30. It was staying bright.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like, so I got to find something to do at night that keeps me entertained.
Yeah.
I like to be outside and like doing stuff, but now I'm like, yeah, cold, it's dark.
A little harder in the city, I guess, too, right?
Maybe I'm not sure. We'll see. I'll figure something out. I might like get back to jiu-jitsu or boxing or something. Give me a couple something to do for a couple hours in the nighttime. Keep
Yeah.
me active. Mike, who do you coach with?
Andrew. And
Eric,
I
how about yourself?
just signed up. I got Greg's coming on to help too, so.
Nice. Very cool. I know Vam, she's there driving. Eric, how about yourself? Who do you work with?
Andrew as well.
Very cool. We got John. So guys, because it's such a small group, I can jump on here and talk about a billion things, but I'd rather just support you guys if it's something specific that you guys want to work through. So what I'm working through right now, so I did a call last night with another one of our groups, and get another guy joining here, Jeff. And I went through my framework for behavior change. It's sort of behavior change, but it's really about state change. Like if I wanted to change a specific outcome. So if you guys understand the concept of like the warrior and the monk, the arousal states. So there's three aspects that control really your ability to control your state or influence your state. So I went through that last night. I was going to teach it again tonight, but it may not be relevant to you guys. So I can shift gears and go in any direction that's relevant to you guys. If you're like, yeah, I'd rather learn about like how do I get huge and jacked? Or how do I learn to control my mind? Or how do I learn to sleep more effectively? Or what are the things that are most pressing to you guys right now? And I can try to give you a little clarity and direction.
I was going to say something that came up for me recently. With training in that, I find I'm a very kind of easygoing, calm person. So it takes me a little while to get going from my workouts, right? To kind of get amped up, and yeah, anything like you would suggest to kind of get yourself amped up for a set or exercise or.
Well, that's literally exactly what I went through yesterday. So I'll give all of you guys the framework because it's useful. It's useful to keep in mind. Mats heard me talk about this yesterday, but there's basically three things that control or influence your state. So when we say state, the best example I give is like if I'm going into the gym to squat 500 pounds versus if I'm sprinting on the track. Versus if I'm reading a book to my kids before bed, versus me here right now, versus like you're playing a little Barry Manilow with your significant other, or Barry White. Very different levels of state, right? Very different types of versions of yourself. So there's three things that drive the state. One is your chemistry. Two is your cognitive framing. And three is your arousal state. And those are the three ways that we can shift our ability to be more effective in every situation. So when I say chemistry, simple way to think of it, there's a lot of things that influence chemistry. But if I give you a cup of coffee, that's like a bomb to your chemistry, and you're gonna have lots more energy. Same as an example, if someone took like a stimulant, there's a lot of energy there. So it's this big, overwhelming signal in your chemistry. Another example of the things that influence your chemistry is sleep. If you sleep poorly, your chemistry will not be constructive to you having an ideal state. Some examples of chemistry, the things that influence chemistry are going to be genetics, food, supplements, peptides. Those are all aspects on the sort of chemistry plane, right? Second, we go to cognitive framing. And I think what cognitive framing is how do I think about this situation? So it's, do I have agency? And what is my appraisal? And agency is, do I feel like I have the ability to make a change? Yes or no. And what is my appraisal? Meaning, like, is this stressful? Is this easy? Is this difficult? Am I afraid? Am I strong? The third one is, how prepared am I? So agency, appraisal, and preparation. So agency and preparation are sort of the same. Agency is like, do I feel like I have the ability to act? And preparation is, am I prepared to act? And so that's how we think of a cognitive framing. And the final one is arousal. And the greatest way to think of arousal, and the example I used yesterday, was if you were to walk into a room that's really bright and really loud and really cold, that's a huge amount of sensory information. So your nervous system is going versus the opposite, which is dim lighting, warm, and soft music, right? Very calming to the nervous system. And that's an example of arousal. So arousal is like, am I ready to run through walls and be super amped up? Or am I calm, relaxed, and chilled? And those three, and that's a continuum. Obviously, those are extremes. And so those are the three entry points, or three ways to influence your level of preparation for anything you do. So if, Mike, you're walking into the gym going, well, which of these can I influence? The answer is generally all of them. But now that I know how, that I can influence them, how do I influence them, right? So if I don't influence chemistry, like, well, my food influences my chemistry, my light influences chemistry. Like, there's a whole bunch of things that can influence my, you know, biochemistry. Chemistry is basically molecules, right? Mental framing is like, I can get really pissed off and get really angry real fast if I wanted to, or I can be really calm and subdued if I want to. And it's not a personality trait as much as it's a decision, right? You can make the decision to be fired up. And then, you know, I can make a decision to be fired up and not be fired up. I can make a decision to be fired up and then take action to become fired up. That's the arousal states. So I'm writing a whole chapter in my book on this now, which is the purpose of the book, or the framing of the book, is to be able to hand you an operating system for your body. Most men don't understand their body. They don't understand how to interact with their body. They don't know how to understand or optimize their body. So if we can understand this, you know, and another example is sleep is just another state, just like waking up in the morning, making love to your wife and reading a book to your kids. It's just a variation of you. It's a different avatar of you. So if I want to learn to sleep, I want to influence chemistry, cognitive framing, and arousal states. And it's all the same. So if you can understand the framework, you can apply it anywhere. So I'll pause right there and ask if you guys have any questions.
Yeah, could I ask a question?
Far away.
I guess for me, I feel like I've been, you know, working with Andrew for a while. I've been following you for years and, you know, really trying to do all the things, trying to take in as much information as I can. And I still really feel like I just get really affected by outside forces, whatever it may be. And it's,
tell me what that means, affected.
Like, even if I go in with the knowledge of how to do it and the desire to do it, I still feel like sometimes whatever it may be just pisses me off, or like affects me in a way where it's like afterwards I look back and it's like, I should have been able to control myself in that situation. Or
got it.
Ever, like, be it parenting or whatever.
Yeah.
Hopefully that makes sense, but.
Of course. Yeah. So you're being influenced by something outside of yourself that's either distracting your mind or distracting your emotional state, which is throwing your arousal state off. Is that what I'm hearing?
More or less. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a bit of a tangent and then I'll come back around. So, there's four things that I call master skills that every man must learn. And those master skills are, you master your body, you master your finances, you master your communication, and you master your emotions. To be the most effective version of yourself, those are the four master skills, I believe. And what mastering your emotions means is separating the internal state from the cognitive dialogue. So here's what that means. You can experience things in your body. So if someone walks into my house right now and I don't know, they cause some chaotic response and I can feel it, and my body starts to get whatever reaction it gets, neck down, and then my brain starts to interpret that reaction and I react, right? So I'm conflating, I'm overlapping the response neck down and the response neck up. Those two things do not have to be, do not have to go hand in hand. So as an example, Eric, my kids do something, my wife does something, my tax attorney does something, and I feel it in my body. It causes an instant reaction. And so that to me is the absence of emotional mastery. And one of our greatest opportunities and challenges as men is to create a separation between reaction and how we respond to it, right? And so that sounds like what's happening. It's like I'm experiencing some emotional thing. And the reason I say create a separation is sort of important, because when most people say, I have anxiety or I get anxiety, it's just a fucking phrase that someone else put on it that so you can label it. Not saying you're getting anxiety, but everybody's the same thing. We have these like, I'm anxious, I'm overwhelmed, I'm afraid. And you're like, you get all these blanket terms that mean absolutely nothing. All it means is you're feeling something in your body and you don't really know how to describe it. And someone else told you, oh, that must be anxiety. So why don't you label it as anxiety? So it makes it nice and neat to put in a container and go, oh, I have anxiety. No, you don't. You have an emotion in your body that you have the ability to interpret, you have the ability to change, and you have the ability to ultimately decide whether or not you're going to act on it or react to it. So what it sounds like to me is you're being influenced by and now I'll say this is super important too. Everyone has emotions and everyone experiences them very differently. There's different levels of emotions. You may be a really highly emotional person. I'm a really highly emotional person. And all that means is emotions can be thought, there's more than this, but this is a generalized simplification. The emotion you're feeling generally is adrenaline. And that if you're getting like anxious or you're getting like irritated or agitated, it's all the same, what's called the general adaptation response. So you're getting this surge of adrenaline that makes it feel like your heart goes up and your muscles kind of constrict and your brain starts racing. We all get the same adrenaline response in different amounts. So there's three phases to an adrenaline response. There's the spike, there's the baseline, and then there's the breakdown, right? So we all have varying amounts of that. So there's a genetic, there's a gene for the acute response, the spike. There's a gene for the baseline, and there's a gene for the breakdown and recycling. And so you may be someone who has a big acute response, a high baseline, and a slow metabolism, which basically means it sticks around for a long time and you're sort of in it. And you're like, and so am I, right? I'm the same. And so when we experience things that are over emotional, we experience stress in a heightened way over most people. So what can generally happen is it can overwhelm our life if we allow it to. And you're like, okay, now that I know that, and I can't change my genetics, I can't change my response, I must take responsibility and change how I am able to tolerate it, how I'm able to interact with it. So inevitably things are going to get in your life that are going to piss you off. Inevitably things in your life are going to bring you stress, but you can't let it take you off track. And it's absolutely true that some people are going to have an easier time. This in some ways is your gift. In some ways is your challenge. Why is it a gift? Because it makes you more able, learning is easier. So people who have higher adrenaline generally learn faster. There becomes a point of diminishing returns where you're overstressed and you can't learn. But if you have higher adrenaline in all phases, learning adrenaline is really important for learning because it narrows focus. I can really be focused on one thing that helps, or that's what adrenaline does. So now you're like, okay, well, when I experience this internal emotion, the first thing I need to do is create a separation between what I feel in my head and what I feel in my body and what my brain tells me it is. Because my brain's like, I'm angry, frustrated, I'm anxious. You're creating all these completely unnecessary labels, which it's nice to have a label, but the problem with labels is people start to label it as it's something I can't change, which is not the truth. So in that instant, when you experience something that's distracting you, you need a coping strategy or an action plan that's like, okay, I feel this. What's the best way for me to redirect it or change it? And that's sort of the best sort of long-winded answer to be like, oh, here's how to understand what's actually happening in my body and how do I now redirect this? So here's how this works. Most people who have an overwhelming adrenaline response will become avoidant, will become anxious, will develop panic and attacks, or they'll become alcoholics, drug users, or obese because they'll overeat. They'll find some external mechanism of compensating, and, depending how overwhelming it is in their life, they'll develop a coping strategy. So what you're looking for, it sounds like, and again, I'm maybe putting words in your mouth, you're looking for some positive coping strategy that's not going to be destructive to your life, but is going to help you manage these state shifts that happen. First, you're not alone. I have the same situation. Man, I can tell you, like, can't tell you how many times I've sat in the parking lot of the gym for an hour, calming my state before I went in. A lot, because I was like, I'm gonna go in. I'm either gonna kill somebody. I'm not gonna have a good workout. So I'm like, I need to chill out. So what's the coping strategy? Well, the single best thing for a large adrenaline response is movement, by far. Any type of movement and exercise is most effective. So what you can do is something that's very low focus, very high repetition. So like focus, like high focus, like I got to go and do a heavy squat, takes huge amounts of cognitive energy. Don't do that. Go in and walk. Go and walk on the treadmill. Go ride the bike. Go do something that's sort of like easy and repetitive for 10 minutes. That state will pass. You can do your workout. Like very low cognitive load, very repetitive, ideally moving what's called forward ambulation, like moving in the direction of something. That's going to be the best way to get you out of that state. Long roundabout answer, but hopefully I close the loop. Helpful or
Yeah,
annoying?
definitely. Yeah, that was helpful. And that, I mean, what you described, that response is exactly it. And then also just being able to get to a point in the day where I can like let my nervous system take a break and actually repair and recover. And I do think I'm getting better at that, but it's a struggle.
Well, you don't necessarily need a break. You need a strategy. So, like a break assumes that the nervous system will go back to a default on its own, which it will not. What you'll start to do is you'll start to create this repetitive, habitual, like overly amplified anxious state, and that will become a personality trait. What starts as a state becomes a trait. So you're like, okay, well, I need to literally take some action to get myself out of this like perpetual, and I use the term anxiety loosely, but it's like some version of like an overstimulated, over anxious internal reality, right? So I mean, moving, meditation, breath work, mindfulness, all those types of things, those are your pillars. Nature can really help. But you like find something, and here I did a podcast on this week. So here's the unfortunate thing. Some things are instant. Some things take time. And the things that are instant are all the things that are bad for you. It's the food, it's the drugs, it's the alcohol. Those are bad for you, but they're instant. And that's why people become addicted to them. And the things that take time, like the exercise, the movement, the meditation, the breath work, those are good for you, but they're not instantaneous relief. So it's really, one of those things that some people will inevitably struggle with until they understand that it's just a new strategy. You just need a new approach. Hopefully that helps, man. And I'll tell you what, I go through it every day, man. I go through it every day. One of the most useful things I do, I don't know if you do this, but I'll call it out to myself. So the way I tend to do that is I get frustrated. Mats will tell you, here's my frustration sometimes. I get frustrated and I'll express frustration and I'll say to myself, like, oh, like you're Mats is laughing. So like I have this reality in my head, and if people aren't meeting my reality, I get frustrated. And so my anxiety is like frustration. I'm like, fuck sakes, let's get the thing done. And I say to myself, like, oh, I see myself being frustrated. I don't want to be frustrated. I'm going to let that go. And as soon as I do that, it falls away. And it's a habit. It gets easier over time. Yeah, the reason I chose solo person sports in my life is because I didn't like relying on other people. I was always like, I'll just do it myself. So I was really good at solo person sports because I was always the one who held all the responsibility. And now that I have a team and I have to like help people hold the responsibility and they don't meet the expectations, I get frustrated. So I'm learning to navigate that stuff. I'm sure he's buying there laughing at me. Jeff, welcome to the call. Anything I could support you with?
No, I'm just happy to kind of hear and learn a little bit more. I can, in that vein though, breathing techniques.
Yeah.
Where did you start to kind of learn some of those? What references do you use to kind of say like, I'm in state X, this is kind of the breath pattern I would use for that or that kind of stuff? Cause that's kind of interesting to me how that works. But
yeah, I'd love to walk you through it. So, the irony of how my brain works is when I want to solve a problem, I don't like to just do like a minimum effective dose, as you can hear in the way I respond to questions. So when I wanted to understand breath work and I saw the opportunity that breath work presented in performance, I went and I built a course on it. So I studied everything I could for about 3 months. And I literally read every expert, I read every book, I took every course, and I understood it in a way that most people can't or don't. And so I'll give you like the shortest version I can. I promise it won't be long. So there's three pillars that you should understand about breathing. So breathing is influencing biomechanics. Breathing is influencing biochemistry. And breathing is influenced by cadence. So biomechanics, the literal movement of how we breathe. Biochemistry is influencing our pH. It's influencing the transfer of oxygen and carbon dioxide, which influences our pH. And then it's also influenced by cadence, which is influencing our arousal states. So, and each of them is equally important for different reasons, and they overlap a lot, even though a lot of people don't think about it. So, for example, if your mechanics are dysfunctional, breathing mechanics, everything you do on top of that is also going to be dysfunctional, including walking, including breathing, including squatting, including lunging. Everything you do is dysfunctional. If your breathing pattern is dysfunctional, everything you do on top of that is dysfunctional, every little movement in your body. So we have to look at what are your breathing mechanics, because breathing mechanics can be massively influencing your stress states, or it could at least leave a very, very strong indicator of what your stress states are. So how I breathe, chemistry is I'm shifting my carbon dioxide and oxygen ratio. So you can imagine as I breathe in, I take in more oxygen. As I breathe out, I expire CO2, right? So that's every time I breathe, that's shifting pH. So if I accumulate more oxygen in, my pH actually becomes more alkaline. If I expire and hold my breath and I accumulate more CO2, my pH becomes more acidic. And it literally shifts very, very, very readily. The only way to shift your pH, in fact, is with your breathing. So people talk about like consuming an alkaline diet, it doesn't work. The only way to shift your pH is through breathing. And the final one, and I'll get into some more details, is understanding cadence and how that influences your arousal state. So there's four phases of breathing. So there's an inhale, a pause, an exhale, and a pause. And each of those can influence your arousal state significantly. So if I take a fast breath in, my heart rate should shoot up, my blood pressure shoots up, and my body releases adrenaline instantly. So my heart rate can go from 50 at rest to 100 in one breath very quickly. I mean, like, oh, that's a really big shift. That's actually a really, really big indication, a really good indication of a really healthy, primed nervous system. The ability to go from rest to arousal in what, like the shortest amount of time possible. That's an indication of a really healthy nervous system, high HRV. Conversely, on the other side of that, like one extended slow exhale can really slow down my resting heart rate, drop my blood pressure, and bring me into a calm parasympathetic state. So learning how those breath cadences influences you is important. Then you can start to observe and go, well, what is my breathing mechanics? Is it up and shallow? Right? Anxious. I mean, obviously that's an exaggerated version. Or is it slow, low, and deep? Right? That's going to be a more calming parasympathetic system. So we're looking at, well, where's my current baseline? How many times am I breathing a minute? What's my heart rate every minute? And how is that ultimately influencing my current state of arousal and focus? So I would just start to pay attention to what is your respiration rate per minute? How long is your inhale and exhale? And if you had one simple term to take away, which got like beat me over the head by Dr. Litchfield, who is the probably the number one breathwork guy in the world, then I'll give you some more resources. He said, Ben, if you wanted one simple piece of advice for longevity, breathe less. That's all. He's like, exhale, focus, Wim Hof. Like, he's like, no. He's like, breathe less. That's it. And so what that means is his advice is, could you breathe in so softly that you don't disrupt your nose hairs? And in the beginning, it's really hard. It's really intentional. You're like, I got to not disrupt my nose hairs. Like, I'm barely taking little sips of air in. He goes, yeah, that's the point. He's like, as little air in as you can, and then expire. As little air in as you can, and then expire. And you're like, okay. So there's three primary resources if you want to keep looking for breath work. Dr. Peter Litchfield, he's the only one guy in the world who has a performance breathwork master's program. Patrick McEwen, he owns Oxygen Advantage. He's based out of Ireland, a really smart guy. Not a doctor, but really smart guy. And then Brian McKenzie, he's the only guy in the world who actually understands performance and breathing. I would say Litchfield sort of does, but he runs the program, but I think McKenzie's better. Now there's other guys like James Nestor who wrote a book, but he's just a reporter. He's not a breathwork guy. So I would say Peter Litchfield, Patrick McEwen, Brian McKenzie.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Does that answer your question, or do you want to go a little more specific?
No, that's good. That's great.
I'll try not to answer 10-minute answers the next time. So give me the goods, man. What other questions do you gentlemen have?
Ben, I have a quick question.
Yes, sir.
I got my genetics report back. I think there are somewhere around 180 reports. I went through a few of them. Some of them are making sense to me. Some of them are beyond my knowledge. So how do I use those reports to my advantage? Or like, is there anybody that can go through that report and explain me what to do next?
I might know a guy, Vamshi.
Is that
Well,
you?
do you do it with us?
Yes.
Where are you driving right now? How much time you got?
It might be another 15 minutes before I go home.
Let me sure. Oh, it just so happens I have your report right here, my friend.
Oh,
Do you
thanks.
want me to go through some stuff, or do you want me to
Oh yeah, that
yeah.
would be great. Yeah.
So we could plan something privately, Vamshi, if you want. I'm just going to look through it real quick to see if there's anything that's like super important to what's important to you. So we always sort it by training stuff. The first six things I see here are training related. So it suggests you can tolerate a higher amount of volume, which is actually useful to know. So higher rep ranges, higher set ranges, slightly shorter rest periods. That's because you're predominantly so slow twitch. So you're probably designed for like endurance stuff, actually. So if you want to train, you're probably gonna, the suggestion is, which I don't necessarily always agree with, but the suggestion is you're gonna be more responsive to slightly higher amounts of volume. But you're then gonna have to make sure you're getting enough calories intra-workout to make sure you're not breaking down too much, because I know you're relatively ectomorphic in nature. So I would say in your case, I would train at least one to two exercises extremely heavy, like 3 to 4 reps, like really heavy. And then everything else can be slightly higher reps, slightly higher volume. And just make sure you're taking enough essential amino acids, creatine, and electrolytes during the workout, even carbohydrates during the workout.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's training related. Let's see if anything else comes up here. So your body doesn't do really well with saturated fats. That's useful to know. You have a higher need for MTHFR, so methylfolate. That basically means your methylation is a little challenged. So just making sure you're consuming enough green leafy vegetables, maybe liver. Liver is very high in B vitamins, or taking a methylated B vitamin supplement. I just sort for high priority things. So I'll go through some ones that sound super high priority. So MTHFR is basically oversimplification, the way your body detoxifies things. So we want to make sure you have enough B vitamins for support. So lots of green leafy vegetables, supplemental liver, either a supplement or a food, or taking a B vitamin. Not all of them necessarily, but some of them.
Okay.
Yeah, interestingly, that's kind of conflicting. So you may have a, do you tend to get really sore from training?
Not all the time. Initially, like if I have a gap and then I go, I get sore. But if I continuously do that one and then sleep well, I don't have soreness. Like recently, I'm observing if I don't re sleep well, right?
Yeah,
Or if
okay.
I'm stressed at work, that's when I get sore.
We've got pretty good inflammatory genes in general. You've got one, so there's a bunch of genes that are inflammatory related, but there's three that are like big ones, and you've only got one of those, like the worst version of one of them, which is okay. So interleukin 10, you've got a very low functioning interleukin 10, which basically means interleukin 10 is an anti-inflammatory cytokine, which basically means if yours is low, you don't really have that protective aspect of interleukin 10. So the mechanisms there or the interventions there are going to be magnesium, vitamin D, fish oils, and curcumin as your primary like supplements.
Okay.
Actually, is there any specific thing that you're curious or concerned about that you want me to focus on? I just want me to kind of go through everything quickly.
No, I saw something about this caffeine, which actually was interesting, because it says like I can metabolize caffeine very well.
Yeah.
But usually whenever I take anything caffeine, I feel nauseous. Like I never liked coffee. But one thing that I observed recently was like if I take caffeine, then MCT and some carbs, I have lots of energy during my workouts, like the electrolytes, MCT, some kind of plain sugars. That's actually helping me. So is it just the coffee alone, like black coffee? It's that
Yeah.
makes me
So what I would,
nauseous.
so I think you said something
Yeah.
super important there. By putting the MCT in your coffee, it slows down the stomach emptying and the absorption of the caffeine. I'm the same way. I won't drink coffee without MCT ever, because it really slows down the MCT specifically slows down the absorption of the caffeine. If I take even a half a cup of coffee that's black, it's like so overwhelming for me. I feel anxious. I feel terrible. I feel nauseous. By putting MCT in there, I feel super focused, super calm. So that's really good. You figure that out, I guess, either on purpose or by accident, but that's a really important hack.
Thank you. Yeah. I think maybe I didn't know how to go or like if there is anything that is advantageous or if there's anything that I can work on, or because I remember like during the camp you mentioned something about not liking the vegetables, the bitter stuff. I think I read somewhere in my report that I have that too. So they asked me to load up with the Brussels sprouts or something, but not the other bitter stuff.
Yeah.
And then lots of berries and stuff like that, yeah, to compensate.
So I'll tell you what, man. I'm on page 9 right now. You've got, in general, very strong genes. So there's not a lot of bad, like weak. So good and bad isn't the right way to frame it, but like strengths and weaknesses. So like you don't have a lot of weaknesses in your genes. So there's only 2 pages of high priority things, and they're basically just like vitamin deficiencies. So you don't have a lot of important things to pay attention to. Like you've got very strong genes overall, I would say. There's nothing here that this one's maybe important. So like you have an increased need for vitamin D, sort of important. You have an increased need for vitamin B2 and B6, so that's riboflavin and P5P. But that's just because of your methylation support is not great. So like you're only the only thing you have here is methylation support. So as long as you're getting enough green leafy vegetables and liver, you're probably going to be fine, man. Like I if you don't take liver, I would take a supplement or like eat liver. But man, everything
Well, I
else,
eat liver, so
yeah, everything else is pretty good. Like you said, there's the caffeine metabolism, but that's not something I would worry about. You've got two genes here for DNA damage. Okay, this one may be probably useful to know. I don't think it would affect you, but useful to know because I know you live in New Jersey. Oh, actually, no, that's not that one. Yeah, you've got two genes for DNA damage, so a slightly increased predisposition to more DNA damage. So what does that mean? If you're getting a lot of radiation exposure, a lot of EMF exposure, you may, or a lot of free radical damage, you may have an increased predisposition to having more DNA breakage. So like a faster rate of breakdown of DNA. We all have DNA breakage. We all get about 10,000 DNA breaks a day. They usually get taken out. If it goes faster than that, then that could become a problem. But as long as your immune system is strong and your natural killer cells, your T cells are strong, these so-called neutrophils, you're gonna be fine. So nothing here is like overly concerning. You have slightly increased insulin secretion genetically, but I wouldn't worry about it with your body weight. How's your glucose and insulin levels, Ramshi?
In all the blood tests, they were normal. Like, there was never a spike or anything.
Yeah, just watch
But I
for it.
never. Sure.
So I know people of Indian culture, because you're so lean, so fat in some cases, ironically, is actually an advantage. So because you're so lean, your body doesn't have extra places to put. So let's say your glucose stays really high and you have a lot of fat. Your body goes, oh, no problem. I can store all this extra glucose in the fat. It's going to convert it to fat and store it. Because your body fat is so low, the body doesn't have anywhere to put it. So your glucose levels and insulin levels stay elevated for a long time. And people of Indian culture can become diabetic very quickly because they have so low body fat. So you have to be careful of your insulin and glucose levels. But I know you don't overeat carbohydrates. So, like, probably nothing to worry about.
Okay. Yeah. I don't mean to take everybody's time. Probably I don't want to bore everybody else.
All good, man. Yeah, so there's nothing else there that's worth looking at. Nothing that's like super pressing. But listen, I'm happy to jump on the phone with you again if you have more questions. Just send me a message. But there's nothing there that's super. Yeah, that would be like, oh, you should change this. So B vitamins, vitamin D, insulin levels, man, everything else looks really good. And maybe your training can adjust a little bit. Yeah, so like you're certainly in the top 5% of people I've ever seen in genetics, maybe in the top 3%, as far as like having no overwhelming, like obvious things, like, oh, you got really good genes. I did a guy a couple of days ago, and he had some of the worst obesity genes I've ever seen. And you're like, man, you don't stand it. Like, if you're not a soldier with your diet, you're gonna be fat. Like, there's no way you're not gonna be fat. And you can see it in his genes. You're like, okay, so in his case, we have to do everything we can to train right in the morning, sleep well at night, make sure you're controlling your carbohydrates, because otherwise he's gonna want to overeat, he's gonna be obese. So we have to like be super disciplined with yourself. You're like, you probably can, you're already very disciplined, but you could probably get away with a bunch because you got good genes.
Thank you.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure.
I've got a question.
All right, John.
You've challenged the last two calls I've listened to my understanding of when to eat carbohydrates, because I've always thought that I should have my carb meal right after I work out, and you said either before or during. Can you explain that?
Yeah. When we're trying to train hard, right, or when we aspire to train hard, that's really dependent on the glycolytic energy system. So your body has, in an oversimplified way, your body has two, actually three primary energy systems. So fat and carbohydrates. So beta oxidation and glycolysis. Glycolysis is dependent on carbohydrates. So if you want to drive higher intensity training, it's dependent on carbohydrates. It's dependent on glycolysis. So by putting some carbohydrates in before and during training, you naturally drive that process more effectively, and that's going to allow you to train harder. If If you try to train on no carbohydrates, glycolysis will be stagnant, to be slowed, because it's not the primary system. The body will tap into more fat, which is okay. If someone's obese and wants to lose fat, we want them to tap into fat. If someone wants to build muscle and train harder, driving the glycolytic system pre-training and during training is extremely important, or not extremely valuable. I would say it's important, but extremely valuable. So that's just how you drive higher level performance. You may get 10, maybe 20% better performance out of training than if you did no carbohydrates. That's very subjective, but it's a pretty significant amount of increased performance.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Pleasure. What other questions have you, gents? Guys, don't be afraid. I'm here to support you. I think everyone else is happy to hear the questions as well, so fire away.
I had a question just relating to that last one there, just on the point of carbs in the morning. I'm sure a lot of us probably train early in the morning. And if, say, our goals are to put on some muscle or build some strength, usually I'll train fasted. Is there any benefit to trying to get some carbs in before the workout?
The answer is determine your singular primary goal. Primary goal is building muscle, then you should absolutely be driving carbohydrates before you train. If your single goal is longevity, then it changes. So like I almost never eat before I train because my goal is not to build muscle. Like I know I'm going to take off my top end strength. I'm absolutely cutting off my top end strength, but my goal is longevity. So I'm trying to, by training fasted, you're going to burn through more intramuscular fat, drop down visceral fat stores. Intramuscular fat droplets can cause like additional negative inflammatory response. So I'm trying to train through as much of that intramuscular fat store during training as I can. And then I don't really even replenish carbs after a workout usually. My carbohydrate consumption for the most part is going to be either a little bit with dinner and a little bit after dinner, like in that time frame, not much else. Occasionally I'll have some berries with breakfast, but breakfast, but usually the only carbs I eat are going to be with dinner. That to me is more of a longevity focus than a performance focus. So assuming muscle building is your focus,
Yes, yeah.
yeah, taking some carbs. Now here's the catch. If you find you feel, because some people take carbs and they get sleepy. If you find that happens to you, you can just prolong them a little bit. Wait till you're 20 to 30 minutes in your training. Once you've got like a nice good like amplified energy, amplified focus, then take the carbs. Then they won't slow you down as much. Sometimes pre-workout, some people can get sleepy. Because it drops your dopamine levels. It'll spike serotonin.
Awesome. Thank you.
What else you got, peeps? So if you guys have any topics that you want to hear about next week, anything you guys want, nothing's off the table. If it's like, yeah, I want to learn about peptides, I want to learn about some stem cells, I want to learn about whatever's important to you, cellular regeneration, brain optimization protocols, supplements, heart health, cardiovascular training, maximum, how to get jacked and tan, whatever you guys want. I can't help you with the tan part, but I'll be able to help with the other stuff. Jeff, you done?
So, yeah, kind of a random question, but can you talk through a little bit? So we talked a little bit about breathing. Movement combined with breathing that you would use for squat and deadlift motions. Like, where are
Yeah.
you setting your breath to brace for those two motions?
So, do you want the nuanced answer or do you want the generic answer?
I'll take the nuanced answer. That's good.
All right. So, in your mind, I'm going to try to walk you down a path here, and I'll do it in the shortest amount of time possible. So, in your mind, I want you to follow the breath in your body as for where it's going to go when you take the biggest deep breath in. So, it's first going to, come down into your lungs. It's going to fill, and your rib cage is going to expand. If you keep filling it, it's going to start going down, sort of into your pelvis and diaphragm. Sometimes, if you have really good mobility, it's going to start expanding into your back. So your rib cage will expand in 360 degrees. It should expand out into the back. So the actual path is it goes down into your lungs, laterally out into your sides. And then starts raising up into your upper lobes of your lungs in your front and your back. So it actually fills your thoracolumbar cavity first, so like the belly, then fills the upper lobes of the lungs. But here's the catch. Everyone has different mechanics to start with. So if you're someone who has healthy spinal position, healthy rib cage movement, healthy pelvic position, then it should feel in 360 degrees like a balloon. If you're someone who has rigid spine, rigid rib cage, maybe misoriented pelvis, then it completely changes the mechanics. So for example, if you ever see somebody who walks around sort of like this with their chest up and their shoulders back, the rib cage is kind of open like this and flared, they're going to breathe really deeply. They're probably going to breathe more like, sorry, very differently. They're going to breathe more like anteriorly, where they should be breathing more in 360 degrees. So the nuanced answer is it depends how you breathe to start, how I would cue you. So assuming you're young, you're healthy, you're fit, you're going to breathe naturally in 360 degrees. What I'm going to try to do is breathe into your back. So try to expand your rib cage, specifically your lower ribs. So between the bottom of the rib cage and the top of the pelvis, there's a space. And I'm using my thumbs on purpose because you can literally fit your thumbs in that space. So when I'm breathing to squat, I'm trying to fill that space with my breath. So I feel my back expand, and then I'm going to pull my balls into my stomach, and I'm going to hold that. And so you're bracing your transverse abdominis, pulling up almost like a Kegel. You'll feel your balls pull into your stomach like you're stopping your pee. So first you breathe into your lower back, expand posteriorly, hold your like imagine you're holding your thumbs into that space, and then pull your balls into your stomach. That's how you should be bracing on a squat and deadlift if you have the mechanical capacity to do it. And the reason you breathe into your back is because most people breathe anteriorly and you change the thoracolumbar cavity. You sort of change the orientation of your rib cage and pelvis. By breathing into your back, the concept is called nutation and counternutation of the pelvis. So we're trying to not have you anterior pelvic tilt. We don't want you to like stick your ass out. We want you to keep the pelvis neutral. And by breathing into your back, you keep the pelvis neutral for longer. Long-winded, nuanced answer. Did that make sense or did I go over your head?
No, that sounds good.
Okay. Yeah. The simple answer is breathe into your back as much as you can, and the lower the better. That's actually a really cool thing to practice. If you're someone who wants to squat and deadlift without hurting yourself, it's like sitting here. Like, can I make my back breathe? Can I make my back like go up and down? Which you should. Like your rib cage and your back should be able to go up and on the top and the bottom. You should be able to breathe like in very specific segments of your upper body. And it shouldn't always be, most people breathe in their belly in the front. That's not the best way to breathe. What else you got, boys? Brian,
Quick
what can I
question
say for
on,
you? Okay, greater.
sorry, on creatine, you mentioned it earlier as a supplement, and I just was curious on what your thoughts are in terms of dose. Just seeing a lot coming out now about double, triple, quadruple the
Dude,
fiber.
I've been a 20 gram guy for 20 years. Like, I've been doing 20 to 25 grams of creatine literally for 20 years, and I've never had an issue with my liver or my kidneys or, because I mean, obviously, as a big human for a long time, but like 20 grams of creatine was standard for me, man. So, like, and now the data coming out, and it's always the case, right? It's like the data is coming out, what we knew 20 years ago, it's coming out now to show it's efficacious. Because, like, if creatine would have hurt anyone, it would have hurt me 20 years. Like, I was mega dosing creatine for 10 years straight. And I never had a single negative blood response. So yeah, I'm a big believer.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Brian, what you got, brother?
Still trying to get my body to naturally come back on testosterone a little bit better. For the last 2 years, I've been working on like the detoxification from working in the oil field for years, and the plastics, heavy metals have come down, but I haven't seen much of a change in my testosterone yet. I'm still like in the 370s. And just wondering if you had any suggestions on how I could continue to move forward with doing it naturally and not having to go on TRT.
Who are you working with? Who's your coach?
Damn.
How long have you been working with Greg at all?
Actually, I've been trying to set up with Greg, but he's been having a hard time lately, so
Yeah, he's not so well. So the reason I ask is because there's I don't want to say an infinite number of things that can affect it, but there's a significant number of things that can affect it. And the ones we would start looking at is like inflammation, SHBG. Like we'd want to look at a bunch of different markers. So rather than me just throwing out some bullshit response that probably has no validity and saying, well, just take a bunch of this. Like I would like to look at your labs. So like, where's your zinc? Where's your magnesium? Where's your cortisol? Where's your inflammation? Where's your SHBG? Where's your albumin? And if we could see all those, I could probably start to see a pattern of like, oh, it's this thing. And that would give us an indication of what's going on. Like, is your gut health optimized? Is your sleep optimized? Yeah, like what's your adrenaline look like? You know, there's somewhere in the realm of 8 to 10 things that if I can see them, I can give you a better indication of where to place your time and attention.
Okay.
And to be honest, I'm almost 100% sure Greg can do the same thing. So if that's the problem you want to solve, as long as we have that information, we can help you. If we don't, send it and then just remind Dan to send me a nudge with all the info. It'll take me 10 minutes. You know, it's not going to take me a couple hours.
Excellent. No, that's great. Hopefully we'll get up on with Greg next week is the hope. So.
Man, you know, he had another setback 2 days ago. So like, just bring your stuff to me and I'll help you, man. Like Greg's one of my favorite humans in the world, and I want to give him like the grace to be chilled out for a couple weeks. So if I can help you, I would love to.
Okay, excellent. I'll get that with Dan.
Okay. Yeah, please do. Dan obviously has my contacts, so just tell him to send it to me or reach out.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Gentlemen, is there anything else you guys want to rip through today? We got 7 minutes before you guys can get on with your day. Well, if nothing else, guys, I'll let you go. I hope that, as always, I hope we provided some value for you today. If we did, give it a thumbs up, and I appreciate you. And hopefully, we'll see you next Wednesday. If there's any specific topics you guys want me to cover, send it in, man. I'm going to do my best to be here every week. As long as I'm not traveling, I'll be on these calls every week. So anything you guys want to bring to these calls, I appreciate it. And if you guys can, if you need any additional support from your coach, reach out as well. Enjoy your Wednesday, guys. Thank you. Talk soon.